Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What song is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I'm the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
Calm down, Twanfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
In late December, Arsenal's title challenge suffered a major blow when they were beaten 2-0 at home by West Ham. A miserable experience for Declan Rice, compounded in the final minute of injury time when he gave away a penalty in front of the away supporters, who seemed to take quite a bit of enjoyment in the discomfort of their former player. But Declan Rice is not a man to bear grudges, certainly not against fans of the club where he made his name. And so when he fired in the final goal of a 6-goal rout in the return fixture yesterday, he did what all professional footballers are morally obliged to do when they score a goal against their old team. He respectfully placed his arms out in front of him, palms to the floor in apology, before patting his chest in acknowledgement of the awfulness of the act he had just committed, and politely ushering away any of his teammates who had the harebrained idea that he might want to actually celebrate this moment. Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hi, guys.
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
I'm sure.
Hey, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
Didn't know you were a West Ham fan, Ken. seemed very downbeat today.
There we go.
His seat was very high.
Was there some... Who was sitting in the seat?
That's neither here nor there.
You won't be
Simon.
Simon was
sitting
there.
It was Simon, actually.
It was Simon.
That's okay. You won't be surprised to hear I had a few emails in on this very subject.
Well, did any of them mention Ireland against England in the Nations League?
I've got a call here that says you're the most boring, predictable, condescending interviewer around. Go back to lecturing. You have the charisma of a sick bag.
Oh God,
that's just it. I just mentioned, not you, no me.
Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom.
We don't normally broadcast all the stuff that comes from scum around the country. Click.
Yeah, they all mentioned that. Hypothetical, what might happen?
Okay,
they're all basically the same email. This this one from Kevin Comer. Hey, I'm just after watching Declan Rice's screamer and subsequent non-celebration. Will he afford us the same respect, in inverted commas, when the Nations League game comes around later this year? Should he score, followed with a doleful TV interview? There can't be many non-celebrations on the international stage. And even though, as an Irish fan, it would push me to despair, on the other hand, I would love to see Declan's brain splinter into 4 different directions, unsure as to how best to react without offending anyone with his people-pleasing tendency.
We'll celebrate the goal, but then maybe reprise some old Instagram stories later on. You know, some from like the 2018, 2019 time, you know.
Yeah.
It's the time as an Ireland youth player, maybe. I don't know how he would react. I mean, did Alfredo Di Stefano non-celebrate a goal against
Barcelona?
It was hard to tell
Celebrations were
so muted in those days. It's hard to tell whether people were celebrating
He just dolefully shook
hands,
their teammates'
hands,
as opposed to delightedly.
Exactly. We are talking Bundesliga today with Archie Rintut after Bayer Leverkusen hammered Bayern Munich to go 5 points clear at the top and cement the name of Xabi Alonso at the top of every Liverpool fan's new wish list for a manager. Checking out the Champions League knockouts. I don't know what was going on there.
The
Champions League knockouts, but I was also saying secondcaptains.com.
Wow.
Checking captains?
Wow.
The Champions League knockouts begin.
Do you think we should rename the podcast that for Champions League week?
Possibly, yeah. For full coverage on the World Service. Become a member today. SecondCaps.com. €5 a month plus VAT. Report on Sport Piece Ken.
Yeah, it was amazing stuff from old Harvey Dent, Declan Rice. It was one of the standout performances of the season.
Individual, you mean?
Yeah.
By him.
Yeah, he was absolutely incredible. Now, some would say that West Ham didn't have their best day. They were 4-0 down at halftime. The stadium emptied out at halftime. They didn't run. They weren't really running. I mean, just look at them. They're just sort of like, okay, please just blow this up. Please stop this. And Declan, but you know, a lot of it had to do with the fact that Declan Rice had really smashed them in the first half and showing off his new, harpooning his dead balls into the. There's an image. Yeah, into the area.
Into real, what area? I do not want to know.
Frank Lampard-like set pieces and shooting from downtown. And then, obviously, well, not Frank Lampard-like celebration. Frank Lampard used to, also a former West Ham man and Chelsea supporter, used to take great pleasure in scoring against West Ham.
Yeah, it was probably
my favorite. He knew it.
Yeah, my favorite part of Frank Lampard's career was him rubbing West Ham's noses in every bit of success that he had after he left.
It was much better. Like, I mean, okay, you know, there was the whole, maybe there was some toxic elements to the Lampard West Ham story. Them cheering him as he was stretchered off with a cheering as he was stretchered off with a broken leg was a low point. Screaming at the young man about how much extra weight he was carrying, as for this is his own fans, not they were not his opposing fans at the time. So these types of things, you know.
Listen, we remember the Harry Redknapp having to stick up for him.
Mm.
Yeah, he's gone right to the very top.
Whereas Declan Rice, you know, obviously he led West Ham to a European trophy in his last game. You know, he fulfilled his obligations to them. It was a good story. They got a big fee for him. He was kind enough to give them a penalty in that game that you mentioned,
which was missed, by the way. That would have been 3-0 if that had been scored. But even then, what I remember is the West Ham fans, the away fans, just absolutely breaking their shite laughing, as you would, at Declan Rice, their former player, and him trudging off after giving away the penalty. I think it was one of those ones you have to give away kind of thing. The player was through on goal or whatever. But, you know, if I'm the player at the receiving end of that stuff, surely I'm just waiting to score a goal against these guys and I'm going to wheel off in celebration. But no, people pleaser.
He really is. No, I assume that if he does score for England against Ireland, then he will extend the same courtesy to us.
I should hope so.
I'm trying to figure out which one of them would annoy me more. The non-celebration against us actually would annoy me.
It's more. I think it's more annoying.
It is more.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there is actually a third way here, which is to celebrate the goal, but not like knee slide into the corner flag. As in, like just tone it down. Like, just give us like 4 out of 10. It doesn't have to be 10 out of 10. It doesn't have to be 0 out of 10.
It was the fulsomeness of the non-celebration it was disgraceful. It was a disgusting scene.
It was a vile, disgusting act.
He keeps doing it.
It's a disgrace. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen on a football field.
However, it was a fine performance. Very fine performance. In a very fine team.
I think you've covered that. I think you've already said that. Can we move on, please?
They were feasting on West Ham.
They were.
They feasted on the carcass of West Ham. We smell blood and went for the kill, said Bukayo Saka. Doesn't sound like he's quoting the Bible there. This is the ruthlessness that Arsenal showed towards. Well, of course, West Ham did beat them recently, as David Moyes pointed out.
Twice. They beat them in the cup as well, didn't they?
You know, Moyes is in the position of. There are some cliches that you shouldn't use after a 6-0 defeat. And one of them is, if you'd offered me.
I was like, there aren't many roads for him to go down here.
Yeah. If you'd offered me 2 wins out of 3, basically, I would have shaken your hand and said, thanks very much, said the manager after a 6-0 defeat, which equaled their record home defeat in their history.
Yeah.
And was Arsenal's biggest Premier League away win. And, you know, looking really good, so strong through the middle. You know, Gabriel's getting his head on a lot of stuff now. Rice, obviously, just so dominant.
They're set piece monsters. It's hilarious.
Yeah, Odegaard looking so beautiful, just gliding around, damming at the ball with his little left foot. Trossard was playing centre forward, and I think is their best option there if Gabriel Jesus isn't playing, maybe even if Gabriel Jesus is available. But really, Rice was an absolute... sorry, am I going on about this guy all the time?
Declan Rice.
He was...
Well, you love him. We know that.
He... What was impressive, you know, when they beat Liverpool, was it just last week? Was the kind of physical superiority they had, which is not what you would... Not what you've seen in the pattern of those games in the past. That's changed now. That's where they're at now. And it's Rice who's really made the difference. So it is... it was a huge win. And they look... really rejuvenated by the break. I mean, remember they lost three in a row going into the break, and since then they've won every match. West Ham seemed to... It's funny with Moyes, you know, considering what a great manager he has really been for West Ham, I think it's fair to say that.
Well, you're preaching to the choir here, but West Ham fans don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, that is interesting though, isn't it? Like, how little credit you actually have in the bank for, like, completely stabilizing and sorting out and turning the club into like a pretty good team and winning a trophy. And okay,
62,000 people at the game yesterday. I mean, it was just one of those. I mean, they get huge crowds all the time.
Yeah, they've got a big stadium,
but like 62,000 people is incredible.
Well, there are only about 25,000 left after half time.
That's true.
Well, nevertheless, but they still paid their ticket. They still bought their ticket.
You know what it is with Moyes, I think, is, well, it's pretty obvious, I suppose, in that. They brought him in the first time, right? And he kept them up, no problems, very comfortably. Would have expected to get a long contract at that stage, but didn't. They brought in Pellegrini, was it?
And
it was very much this, like, we're moving up in the world.
We're better than Moyes.
They're almost presenting Moyes as the Big Sam rescuing a club in relegation trouble figure. But now we're going up to Pellegrini. That falls flat on his face. They eventually go back to Moyes. So fans are, in their head, are like, okay, we're moving on from Moyes. And it's like, we're literally going back to, not just to David Moyes football, but to David Moyes. Mm. So he was starting on a bit of a downer then. He is a bit of an anachronism in the way he thinks about the game and how it's played. Mightn't be the most pleasing on the eye to a lot of people. But I totally agree with you. They've had a huge amount of success relative to where they were in the number of years before that. So I don't understand how that hasn't actually... The basic underlying view doesn't seem to have changed among most West Ham fans, that they don't really want them.
Yeah,
of course we're talking now after a 6-0 defeat, where they feel emboldened.
6-0 defeat is bad, but it seems to flip pretty quickly on Moyes. I mean, I think what he's done this season with the team has been really good. I mean, okay, you could say the style of play is a bit like no one else in the league really is playing like West Ham in terms of their style of play. It does look a bit old fashioned. It's like one of these sit back and hit on the counter rather than one of these like the more modern like sort of De Zerbi thing. We're going to try and counter attack, but we're going to do it from our own attacks. You know,
they tried to change a couple of years ago. I heard Michel Antonio talking about this. I've mentioned his podcast a few times with Callum Wilson.
Oh yeah,
it was actually very interesting because he was talking about how whatever big they finished sixth or seventh one season, and they were talking about Champions League. We're going to internally, you know, we're going to try and qualify for the Champions League next year, and we have to change the style of play. And they brought in players to do that, and they changed their style, and it just totally they nearly got relegated.
Mm.
So by the end of that season, they'd obviously changed back, and then. Double down on the old counter-attacking. So I don't think Moyes gets credit. Is it even credit for trying to change it? Realising this isn't working and now going back to Moyes ball.
Yeah, well, what I think he did well this season particularly is the transfers. Like when Rice left, obviously this is going to be, how do you replace this guy? He did it by spending the money basically on three players who did really well. Now, Edson Alvarez got taken over at halftime yesterday, actually. I'm not sure if he was... injured or had just played terribly. I mean, he obviously wasn't the only West Ham player. I mean, the worst moment of the game almost was the ridiculous challenge by Areola on Saka for the penalty. It's just like, what are you doing? You know, he just sort of lumbered out like a zombie. You know, there wasn't any sort of sense of, I'm going to try and get the ball here. It was just like, oh no, Saka's in. Suppose I better, you know, pretend to put in a challenge here and just gives away a penalty. But I was getting back to what he's done well. I think to bring in Kudus, Alvarez, Ward-Prowse, and the centre-back Mavropanos, this has this has really improved West Ham from a point where they were losing Rice, and you kind of thought, well, are they going to fall apart a little bit? And the way the season has been going, they've had some really big wins. They're doing quite well in the league. They're obviously still in Europe. It doesn't really count for much when people basically think that what you're doing is futureless. The more recent signing they made is Calvin Phillips. Obviously, he's only a loan signing. He didn't start the game yesterday. He did have an interesting interview. I saw David Heitner did a piece with him in The Guardian where he talked a little bit about, you know, probably the most famous incident of his career since he left Leeds United, which was when Pep Guardiola said he was fat. He said, so I think the question he was being asked was, what was the toughest moment, you know, of this kind of, he signed a 6-year contract at Man City and started 6 games. You know, it's like, oh God, that's all competitions. Like, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, it's just a total mess, really. Like, his career.
When you're not making the League Cup team at Man City.
I know. And Pep, after the World Cup, this is Phillips talking, after the World Cup was probably the toughest, when Pep came out and said I was overweight, he was right to do so. But there are different ways to go about it. I did not disagree with him. But obviously, I took a big knock on my confidence, how I felt at City. My family were not happy about it either, especially my mother. He said, so basically, he kind of explains what happened there, that after the World Cup, remember, obviously, the World Cup was just ending shortly before Christmas. England made it to the quarterfinals. According to Phillips, he'd been given a post-World Cup return date in December 2022 by the City staff. He was always going to come in before then because he had barely played during the first half of the season due to a shoulder injury. But Guardiola wanted him to report immediately after the tournament in order to be involved in City's friendlies before the domestic restart. He says, I never got that information because if he asked me to have been there, I would have been there. It was just a misunderstanding. I think he was very frustrated with me coming back 1.5 kilos over my weight target. 1.5 kilos.
Not massive?
I mean, not really, but I suppose it is a little. It's 1.5 kilos over, you know. That's a, but yeah, the interesting thing about this also was that he talks about another couple of moments. One of them, he expected to start against Burnley in the FA Cup in March, only to be taken into a room by Guardiola, told otherwise. Then there was the league game against Leicester in April when he was partly fault for the goal City conceded in 3-1 win. I just felt shit. It was probably the low point confidence-wise. I spoke to Bielsa afterwards, his former manager. Mm-hmm. He called me back via translator. We had a conversation for around half an hour. He said he'd watched every game I'd been involved in since I moved from Leeds, and he told me what I thought I should do to become the player I was at Leeds. I mean, that's incredible. I wonder, did he watch all the games in between getting the original call and calling back?
I presume so.
I suppose, to be fair, there weren't that many games.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. There weren't a huge number of matches to catch up on there. But, it seemed like a remarkable detail from Bielsa. Anyway, what else is going on yesterday? Oh, Man United, who, you know, say what you like about Man United. They like playing against Aston Villa. And Gareth Southgate was there getting booed. I don't know if you saw that, Owen.
He got booed?
Yeah, he was booed when he appeared on the big screen.
Oh, no, I missed that.
Why? Because of his mistreatment of Ollie Watkins?
I think so. I think it may be Ollie Watkins. It's just, I think it's because everyone thinks he's got his favourites. And he's just showing his face here. Maybe he's here to see Maguire. We all know that it's all about Hendo, you know? Hendo. It's like Joe Biden 2024. Jordan Henderson going to the Euros. You know?
Run it back one more time.
Are we seriously still doing this? Yes, the answer is Hendo losing 3-2 to Heerenveen for Ajax over the weekend. Mm. But
listen, Ajax is an oil tanker. You don't turn around an oil tanker in that short a space of time. Everyone knows that.
Instead, it was Rasmus Højlund scoring, is it 6 matches in a row or 6 out of 7?
I think it's 6. It's all of them in a row anyway. So I think it's 6 in a row.
Which is pretty good.
I mean, he recently celebrated his birthday. He's feeling good about things.
And Scott McTominay, big Scott McTominay, whose goals have been worth 30% of Manchester United's Premier League points this season.
That's amazing.
Kraft's contract renegotiation time soon, aren't? Maybe
he's pulling a Mark Viduka, is he?
He could be pulling a Leo Messi with this pulling a Jorge Messi. My client McTominay is responsible for 30% of your points. So our starting
is 30% of your wage,
30% of the turnover.
Yeah,
and we'll see. We'll take that as a baseline for negotiations. There was also this incident with Douglas Luiz, old smoky eye Douglas Luiz, who scored a nice goal. And then proceeded to do a little...
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. There's enough to...
No, listen, it was after Declan Rice, it was the most disgusting thing I saw on a football field this weekend.
No, celebrating a goal is what it's all about.
Mm. It was nice. I haven't seen anyone do that before, I don't think. The thing it immediately reminded me of was Emiliano Martinez, actually also against Man United, to the Stretford end, when Bruno Fernandes missed that penalty. Remember the one where he was pointing at Ronaldo, saying, "You should take it." And then he turned around when the ball went over and did a little to the Stretford end.
Well, it was very Alan Pardew-esque, wasn't it?
Well, that was a comparison that seemed to occur to a lot of Manchester United fans when Douglas Luiz, first of all, missed a sitter to make it 2-1, and then, of course, had to watch Scott McTominay, the war bison, flying through the air to connect with the Diogo Dalot's cross.
Bisons tend to do that as well, don't they?
Hey, well, it depends on
through the air.
Depends on the speed. And he certainly butted it.
He
butted that incident. It was a great finish. So... tremendous stuff, Manchester United, reading Aston Villa in. Goal difference is zero. They're just doing it in a way which is very in balance with the universe. It's just such a sustainable model.
Mm.
Like zero emissions, you know?
Zero goal emissions.
Yeah.
not a goal to be wasted.
They're aiming for
a net zero season.
They're goal neutral.
Net zero, but top four. You know, just to show that it can be done.
It can be done, yeah.
So it's been good. Unbeaten in 2024. You know, the last time Manchester United lost a football match was in 2023.
In a previous year.
And that is...
Think about that for a second, Owen.
A lot's changed. What else? I see Roberto de Cromwell left Evan Ferguson on the bench again. We're bringing him on just in time to lose. He seems really in love with this João Pedro guy.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at the...
Well, Pedro wasn't playing on Saturday. But it was Welbeck.
There was a penalty given, and I was like, oh, great. Pedro. Not just another one up, but it was Pascal Gross taking it.
Joe. Pedro.
Yeah.
Well, old João Pedro.
Pedro.
He'd want to get moving up that NPXG minus G chart, because he's right down there. He's knocking around down the bottom with DCL and Darwin Nunez.
Darwin Nunez. Is he? João Pedro is.
João Pedro is down there, yeah. Big time.
Timo Werner? Timo has hardly lifted himself out of the relegation zone.
Timo Werner has only been back in the Premier League for a couple of games.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant piece of play by Son. Obviously, he was back from the Asian Cup to set up the final goal for...
Brennan Johnson.
Yes. A really good win for Tottenham. So at least they're managing to... Well, I mean, it was looking like a bad result for old ETH. But of course, all he can do... And he now says, we can beat anyone.
That, well, except for Man City. That hasn't been up for debate, Eric. It's the we could lose to literally anyone that's the real problem.
Well, we'll see. What else? I suppose there were some big matches happening in Germany. We're going to talk a bit more about that one with Archie. But also in Spain, Real Madrid playing Girona. Girona have been having a great season, but Real Madrid absolutely destroyed them. Jude Bellingham scoring a Thierry Henry goal. You know, have you seen the goal that he scored? He scored two actually, but one of them was kind of a tap in from a rebound. Second one was the first one, Madrid's second in the game, was just incredible. Just the range of abilities that he has. I mean, we've seen him score all kinds of, you know, like power headers, shots from outside the box. Loads of he and Harry Kane are right up the top of that table, by the way, for the top five leagues. You know, the one that João Pedro and DCL is the bottom player. Calvert-Lewin in the top five leagues by this measure, but Bellingham is right up there, and we scores these types of goals. You can see why. This was like a run from 50 yards back, powers away from the defence, rounds the goalkeeper, finishes it off with the left foot on the run.
Just watching it here, yeah, beautiful.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. And Real Madrid have taken control of the Spanish league, and the Girona manager, Michel, afterwards saying, look, you know, we can't, I mean...
He's been saying it all season.
Yeah.
If they've been in and around it all season, they've been top a few times, and he keeps saying, we can't compete with Real Madrid.
We can't. I mean, come on. And when you see, and Vinicius scored an absolutely ridiculous...
But funny, people would be saying the same thing about Bayern never accusing Ken, but they might be sometimes accusing this time around.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's really going to happen. I mean, the league in Spain looks in a bad way at the moment. But Barcelona at the same time were drawing 3-0 with Granada. So the question really is, are they going to let Xavi go to the end of the season, or are they going to just sack him before then? I read in The Athletic, news of Laporta's angry reaction. This is the president, Juan Laporta, when Granada and Barcelona, Granada in 19th position in the table, drew 3-0 with Barcelona, so they're 10 points off Real Madrid, who they're clearly not going to catch. News of Laporta's angry reaction was broken by local station Catalunya Radio minutes after the final whistle, with their report detailing that he threw a tray full of canapes while shouting insults and complaints. This insults and complaints. This Laporta doesn't like to waste too many trays of canapes either. He must have been absolutely fuming when you see this. But it seems like it's only going to get worse. I mean, with Madrid, they've already done a deal to bring in Endrick, who, you know, everyone is saying, oh, maybe this guy is going to be the new Neymar. Mbappe, maybe, is going to join them. Probably is going to join them in the summer. And then you look at Barcelona, and all they're talking about is which of their players they're going to have to sell.
Yeah.
And it's only the good players who anyone wants to buy. Yeah, I mean, it just sort of feels as though, I don't know, there could be quite a few Real Madrid titles coming up over the next few years. That's obviously been the situation in Germany since 2012. Maybe it's going to change this year. It was a great performance by Leverkusen.
I did see somebody saying Harry Kane could move to Celtic at the very end of his career to finally pick up the trophy, and then St. Mirren would end up winning the league.
I know, and I mean, it's a horribly obvious thing to say, but I mean, that's why everyone's saying it, Owen. I also see people saying, have you seen the top goal scorer trophy that you win in Germany?
No.
You haven't seen it?
No.
They call the top scorer the Torjägerkanone. Do you want to see the trophy?
Yes.
Let me just produce a little picture of this trophy for you.
This should work well for...
Here's
on our audio.
Here's Robert Lewandowski holding...
It's sort of a cannon, is it?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think when you see that? Who do you think of a particular football club? Or?
Arsenal.
It's basically an Arsenal logo. They give you a sculpture of an Arsenal logo,
which you can never put in your house
To celebrate winning the top scorer, which Harry Kane is surely going to win, but maybe it's not going to be enough. I was reading an old interview with Alonso by Diego Torres,
of course,
talking about how he stays. He gets up sometimes at 2 a.m. to start preparing his stuff before training. Because he's so excited to get out in the training field.
He probably goes to bed about 8 or something.
He probably goes to bed early, isn't he? But he gets up sometimes at 2. There are beautiful and good players. The beautiful players see beautiful things, but they're not efficient. Why is Messi good? Because he knows how to make the simple pass. Give it to one in the best position. That's being good, not always doing the most brilliant thing. Florian Wirtz does this. That is why he is so good. The question was about Florian Wirtz, the 20-year-old who's... exciting everyone with his performances in attacking midfield for Leverkusen. Talked about, but the interesting thing in this interview is just what I felt was the way Alonso talks about the game, or the way he thinks about the way he's trying to get his players to see it. You have to enter the game thinking that the field is a map. You have to control the areas. You have to know how many players there are on the left and on the right. If there are seven on one side, there are three in the goalkeeper on the other side. The superiority has to be there. If there's only one opposing forward, I have to look forward. If there are two, I have to help my centre backs more. You're counting all the time to know what next step to take. So basically, he's just looking around going, four there, three there, two here. And this is basically what he's thinking all the time in the field. The best midfield players always seem to have an extra second with the ball. They've anticipated their position and their control for the next phase. Those who always have time to play the ball better are the best. They send the ball with the message, I'll give it to you for the next thing. I'll give it to you to that foot so you can control in this direction. The thing that he's done, which is unusual, is... unlike Xavi, for example, at Barcelona, unlike, obviously, his former teammate, Gerrard, unlike quite a few players who have become coaches, the players seem to kind of get a little bit of what he's talking to them about. Maybe part of that is, I mean, I saw Granit Xhaka talking about him. I think it was Marcus Fjortoff, Janaga Fjortoff's son, did some sort of interviews with Xhaka. Xhaka was talking about the differences between Mikel Arteta, who obviously he's been playing with for a few years, and Alonso, who is like Arteta's friend since childhood, and the differences between them and their way of looking at the game. He said basically the difference is Arteta is always kind of playing the same way, or has like his model of how the team should play is the same. You've got a back four, you've got one defensive midfielder and two. 1-6 and 2-8, a triangle like that, one sitting back and two further forward. And that's the way that he sees, and that's the way that his teams are always going to be. Whereas Alonso, sometimes back three, sometimes back four, but always 2-6s, which is what he's doing for Leverkusen. He's one of these two the central midfielders.
Double pivot.
Yeah, whose job is to basically control the game. And this is like the basic unit of Alonso's team. And whatever else, you know, sometimes you can change the shape of the things around it, but you'll always have these two players who are working together. So that was how he kind of summed it up. Maybe it's just he was the right player to sign. You know, I'm giving Alonso credit for like, oh, you know, you're kind of able to make the players understand your vision of the game. I mean, he talks about in the Real Sociedad youth team where he managed, he would play in the games to show them. He'd say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then at some point would put himself on and say, watch, you know, this is, let me show you what I mean.
We'll hear more from Archie about this section.
Yeah. But yeah, it's he's going great, Owen. He really is. It's great stuff altogether.
It's a great audition for the Liverpool job. I'm sure that's the way Bayer Leverkusen fans want to think about it.
Have that framed.
Well, yeah. they should be absolutely, I mean, if they haven't already done a deal with him, they need to go and beg him. I would say at this point, beg the man, because if they don't take him, Bayern Munich certainly will.
Or Real Madrid.
Real Madrid just signed Ancelotti to a new contract.
Doesn't matter. It's Real Madrid.
Ancelotti's about to win the league.
Does not matter. It's Real Madrid.
I think they've got a little window there as a result of Carlo Ancelotti, who everybody loves, leading Real Madrid triumphantly to another title.
What if
Xabi
Alonso
contract
said,
in his hand?
Yeah. What if Xabi Alonso said, "Yeah, but I need to take it now." The fact of the matter is Leverkusen are never going to win the league. My stock is literally never higher than it is right now. You have to go into Jurgen Klopp tomorrow morning and say, "Jurgen, thank you for your service."
I don't think he would say that.
If he did, would you take Xabi Alonso?
I think
if you're a Liverpool chief executive,
I just think that would be a weird development that would kind of throw everything out of kilter. People would be like, "I don't understand how."
In answer to your ridiculous hypothetical question, Murph, I would say no, I will not take that deal. I'm sorry, because absolutely. Why am I engaging with this in a serious?
Not saying you're going to win the league anyway.
It'll scupper the rest of the season. It will piss off the Liverpool fans because you've kicked out their beloved Jurgen Klopp. They very much like and admire and respect Xabi Alonso. Do they love him in the way they love Jurgen Klopp? Not yet, Murph. And I don't think they will if he comes in mid-season and boots Klopp out.
Sorry to upset your cozy little cartel here, okay? Apologies for injecting a little bit of, you know,
outside the box thinking.
Stupidity.
You've all gotten very comfortable in here.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So it turns out that Lampard actually does, he genuinely does feel that sorry for himself. To send him out into the Premier League expecting him to get results with this squad, with this group of players. Like, he looks, the fact is, he looks at that squad, and in his head, all he can hear is, this is his exquisite self-pity. Timo Werner, like, Timo Werner. Imagine.
That's one for the players. Players have to take the responsibility because the message was clear.
Did he bring the players in? Did he bring the Germans in?
And then Jody Morris is like, boss, you know, what are we going to do? He's like, he breaks out of this dream. But like, can you believe that what they're doing to Lampard?
Bayer Leverkusen, they might just do this, you know. 5 points clear now after demolishing Bayern Munich at the weekend. Archie Rintutt, thanks so much for chatting to us.
No problem.
A couple of different things to talk about here. The problems at Bayern and also the unbelievable job that Xabi Alonso and everyone else is doing at Bayer Leverkusen at the moment. We know how this sort of match is supposed to go. This is when Bayern start to put the foot down and, you know, enough of the messing here, but we all know who's going to win the league. And it didn't happen that way at all. Why not?
Because Leverkusen is so good, and I can't believe I'm saying that. The fact that, if you look at the two lineups came out on Saturday, yeah, and I was there and was with Thomas Hitzlsperger for TV, and we were both surprised at the gambles that both Xabi Alonso and Thomas Tuchel had made. And the gamble for Xabi Alonso was going with a front three that he'd not played with so far this season in Nathan Teller, signed from Southampton last season, I think it was, or Burnley even. You had Amin Adli up front, who came on during the week and scored against Stuttgart in the cup. And you had Florian Wirtz, who, of course, is the next world conqueror. But still, that seemed like a risk. And not having somebody as quick as Frimpong on the right-hand side, or indeed Teller, where they've had such joy this season, you were thinking, has Xabi Alonso pepped this? But no, it was Thomas Tuchel who had pepped it, because his Bayern team have struggled to find any identity under him, I would say. And the fact that he decided to mirror Leverkusen's system in this way tells you how good Leverkusen are and how little Thomas Tuchel trusts his players. The fact is, with Leverkusen, just the style of football that they're playing, and it's I think being regarded as some of the best football, if not the best, that's been played in Germany since Pep Guardiola was at Bayern. It's outstanding. And whilst you didn't see it at its free-flowing, most expansive best at the weekend, you saw it at what it needed to be for this game. And I can't remember a Bayern Munich chance across 90 minutes, like a proper Bayern Munich chance. And that alone tells you how well Leverkusen played.
Yeah, I think there was some, I saw some statistic that apparently Kicker magazine, you know, record goal scoring chances, or they have, you know, some statistics, and this was the only the second time in 35 years that there wasn't a single one for Bayern in the time that they've been looking at this. So, okay, we're gonna get to Leverkusen and Alonso and what they're doing so well, but, you know, let's talk about this Bayern mess. I saw this interview by Thomas Müller afterwards seemed to make quite a splash, where it was sort of a wild-eyed rant. I don't know if he was just trying to make himself heard over a fairly loud stadium, but he was absolutely ranting and raving into the camera. What can you tell us about that?
I've never seen him like that before. And Thomas Müller is often the guy who comes out, particularly to German TV, and tells you the lay of the land. In fact, if you want to know generally how Bayern fans feel about a game, then Thomas Müller is the best barometer of that. So his interview itself was fascinating to me because of his anger and because of just how he just went off. But a lot of the time this season in Germany, we've heard players through the lines criticizing their coach, but he was very much going after the rest of the squad here. And the thing that really interests me is actually a word he used, zocken, which is in football sense, it literally just means to play. But zocken is it's the verb you use if you're playing on a PlayStation, on a console. And in football terms, it means having this kind of light, fluid quality and just knocking the ball about with a certain ease. And it showed to me how Thomas Müller has this. He has that ability. He knows that he doesn't need the 3 million instructions from a coach like Tuchel or Nagelsmann, because he's learned it through his career, particularly at early stages when Borussia Dortmund were pushing them. Back in the early 2010s. And the difference is now is you have other players in the squad who have not had that same learning curve because they've not had to, because there's not been any team who's really pushed them in the same way. And I look at the status the likes of, even though he's not played much this season, Serge Gnabry has in the squad, Joshua Kimmich, Leon Goretzka, Leroy Sané, and the fact is they are not as good as their predecessors. They are very good Champions League players, but are they at the same level in terms of caliber and status as your Arjen Robbins, Frank Ribéry's, Bastian Schweinsteiger's, Philipp Lahm's? And the answer is no. And this inability to have this freedom to play with, because a constant theme throughout the season we've been hearing is Thomas Tuchel saying, we're so good in training. And everyone thinks, yeah, okay, right. But the fact that Thomas Müller said the same thing now kind of backs it up. And it shows you that whilst Tuchel definitely played his role in the downfall here, it's also a lot on how this squad has been built and how players have a status that they are not really earning.
I mean, you say that he, you know, okay, there have been examples of players maybe obviously criticizing the coach, but it seemed to me, like, he was asked in the interview, he was sort of actually in midstream talking about how we don't have balls and we don't have this, we don't have that. And the interviewer said, oh, is this because of the coach? And Müller kind of seems to shoot him a look and then says, no, you know, it's all about the players. But like, the stuff that he was talking about, we don't play with freedom. You know, we don't gamble. We don't try things. Well, we're great in training, but under pressure in the match, you know, we can't do it. You know, we're lacking attitude and we don't have the right mindset and mentality and all this. They are the things that the coach is meant to bring. I mean, if a coach is doing well, then the team is going to display those things. And if a team doesn't have any of those things, and especially when he says things like, oh, we play from A to B and we play from B to C, you know, you look at Leverkusen, they're not like that. I mean, that does sound like a team that's kind of got too rigid a game plan. It does seem to, although he was saying, no, it's not the coach's fault, it does actually seem to be pointing back at the coach.
sure. But there was also a phrase he used in the interview, Verkopftheit, which is literally like overthinkingness about the players. And I think whilst Kimmich didn't start this game, and Kimmich and Goretzka in the centre of midfield, by the way, have kind of been quietly humiliated, reprimanded in the way that they've been used by Thomas Tuchel, and how his actions with them have not matched up to the words of his respect for them in press conferences and that. I think that a problem of the team is that there are so many players in it who have shone not too long ago under different coaches with different ideas, and that because Bayern have won so often before, they're probably wondering, well, why do we need to change that system with this new coach again? And when you've got players such as, I mean, he was out on Saturday, but Alphonso Davies, for example, who shone mostly under Hansi Flick and has not reached the same height. Jamal Musiala, who has not been the same since Julian Nagelsmann left, or even really since the World Cup in Qatar. Same with Kimmich and Goretzka with Flick. I think when you have so many players who have their own progress has been better under other coaches, and then another new one comes in, it was very obvious that Kimmich and Goretzka in particular were not happy with the decision to sack Nagelsmann. They were very much on board with him. So even someone like Upamecano, who has made steps now under Tuchel before, I think the fact that Nagelsmann left at the end of the last season or midway through the last season destroyed his game towards the end. And I think it's just this mixture of so many different ideas, and Thomas Müller has the clarity because he has that experience in his career, but these players don't.
Mm, but why is it, do you think, that this Tuchel thing really hasn't worked out? I mean, if you look at what Bayern are doing, they're actually better this season than last season. I mean, they have 50 points at the same point last season. I think they had 41. So that's like, you know, a considerable improvement. Everyone seems to hate what they're doing, though. You know, like the football isn't good. They're getting away with it because Harry Kane is scoring a lot of goals. Mm-hmm. Tuchel's being criticised by people. He seems to be, as you mentioned with Goretzka and Kimmich, he seems not to rate some of the big players. Müller's been on the bench a lot. You know, there have been signings, like the Dier signing was a bit strange. You know, it seems as though no one's really convinced by him. And I'm a bit surprised by that, because I think that Tuchel, in all his previous jobs, okay, there were obviously fallings out with the hierarchy have been a feature of his, you know, of his career. But generally, his teams have performed well. You know, I mean, he has been able to get good performances out of his teams in Dortmund and Paris and at Chelsea. And it just seems as though it hasn't worked at Bayern somehow. What's the reason for that?
These players need to be having fun. And is Thomas Tuchel the guy to enable that? I think that's partly the issue, is that the players look so bored by things because they've won the league 11 years in a row, and because they won the title in name on the final day of last season, but effectively Dortmund lost it. And I think that enabled more security in what they've been doing. And Tuchel has up to the weekend they've been playing the sixth best season in Bundesliga history, to further your point. But the problem is, having been in the stadium for so many of these games, when the current president of Bayern Munich is coming out and labeling them as boring in a recent defeat to Werder Bremen, that tells you that they just seem so laboured in the way they go about their business. And the most innovative side of them has been their set pieces. But when you're Bayern Munich and you have that squad and it's not all knitting together, then you've got problems. Yeah. And it's particularly with Tuchel, you can see that he wants the fluidity every time. I've spoken to him in interviews, it's talking about fluidity and energy, but that is not translating onto the pitch. And whether that's because not enough of the players are on board with him or able to just get their own heads right, I think it's partly down to Tuchel and needing to simplify things. But the fact that Tuchel's trust in the players is low, I think back to a game against Stuttgart in the first half of the season. Stuttgart, who, along with Bayer Leverkusen, are playing the best football in the league this season on a budget which is 10 times smaller than Bayern Munich's. Thomas Tuchel basically put his whole game around neutralizing Stuttgart coming to the Allianz Arena, which is bizarre when you think of the lineup that he had at his disposal, even with the injuries that they've had this season. And when that's the case, and they won that game 3-0, but in the back of my mind, that stuck because I was like, surely as Bayern Munich, you have to have your identity that, no, they're coming to our house. We're going to nail them out the park regardless because we are Bayern Munich. And that has been lost for sure, this identity of who Bayern are. And you can you've steadily felt more and more that the mood has been shifting this season.
Yeah, interesting. The set piece ingenuity is a nod to Anthony Barry there, who we know from his brief time in the Irish coaching setup. But I want to ask you about Bayer Leverkusen, because they are having fun. Nobody is bored there. They're now the only unbeaten team left in the top five leagues, Archie. Unbeaten in 31 games in all competitions. 27 wins, 4 draws. This is ludicrous stuff. That would be impressive by Bayern Munich standards, let alone Bayer Leverkusen. So how has Xabi Alonso done this?
So the most interesting thing for me about what they do is working out that plan B is plan A at a slightly different tempo. And he just wants his players to wait for that right moment when it should come. And actually speaking to him in interviews after games, Sometimes when I say a question, I can see him kind of wince and be like, no, you're talking absolute rubbish there. What are you on about? But when I said to him, is it around that kind of area? He was like, that's exactly what he wants his players to get. And the real, I think, win that they've made this season is, sure, being able to play this football, but the signings that they made in the summer enabling this kind of football is huge, because they knocked each and every signing out the park when it comes to Granit Xhaka in the center of midfield, and how he organizes the team, how he's the extended arm of Xabi Alonso on the pitch. You look at Alejandro Grimaldo, who has just a swoon-worthy left foot that I think it's up there with David Alaba and Iron Robin in terms of the best I've seen in the league. I would name Leroy Sané, but if Leroy Sané was consistent, then maybe we could consider him in those terms. Jonas Hoffmann as well. He didn't start on Saturday, but he's been an excellent signing. And Victor Boniface, who's been out injured. So the mixture of the signings, the football that they play, and how they stick to their identity no matter what. But also Alonso. I was thinking of the coaches in world football that can still do it on the pitch. And it's probably Zidane, but apart from that, Alonso is perfect for transforming this group of players, some of which like Jonathan Tah, who it looked like they'd maxed out their potential. Tah, you may not know this, released a documentary a few years ago, which was entitled Jonathan Tah, the Next Virgil van Dijk.
Oh, wow. Now,
yeah. I watched an episode and thought, this is something. But since Alonso's come, the words have actually turned into actions with Tah. And seeing Tah's reaction, was asked him about what it's like to work with Alonso, and his eyes just widened and was like, well, when he shows you how to do it on the pitch still, then that commands a certain amount of respect. And I think footballers are quite simple in that regard, in that if you show them something that is very impressive like that, and you're the manager, because so often I think they're used to hearing from so many coaches who are telling them to do this and that, and they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you can impress them on that level and be like, no, I can do this,
so,
you're a lot fitter
and
younger.
So many managers get that so wrong though, Archie. You know, from Roy Keane showing his goalkeeper Sunderland how to save a free kick, to Glenn Hoddle telling David Beckham how to hit a free kick. You know, this kind of
Rafa
stuff.
Rafa telling Luka Modric not to play the ball with the outside of his foot.
Now, Rafa might be a different example, because I think Luka Modric might be thinking, I know a bit more about football, how to play it, than you do, Rafa. But in terms of those big name managers, so many of them get it wrong. They don't have whether it's the personality trait required to actually relay that information without pissing off the player. But it seems like Alonso is able to do all that.
that's the final, and I guess, as you say, most important element. It is this Gipuzkoan mentality and upbringing that Alonso had, along with Sid Lowe wrote about this, along with Unai Emery and Mikel Arteta as well. He does have this humility, and the way that he goes about his business in the press, it has infected the players as well. That he's like, he said on Saturday to us that if anybody thinks that we've achieved anything, then they're not very intelligent. Mm-hmm. And actually having this ability to pull everybody down and say, look, we've achieved nothing yet. I can tell you that that was a mistake that Borussia Dortmund made last season in terms of the euphoria that you felt after every game. It helps that Leverkusen is a quieter environment to work in as well. But Xabi Alonso is very difficult to bring out of his lane when it comes to the way that he answers things. Like if you even try and I've stopped asking about the title race, because I just know what the answer is every time. It's, well, we're just thinking about the next game. And in the way that some coaches and managers we've seen, they look irritated by the press when they have to answer that question. Xabi Alonso just looks like I'm just getting on with things. And if you want to be irritated, that's fine, but I'm just doing my thing. And I think that he's just playing his own game on the media level as well. And he's excellent, you have to say.
So, I mean, earlier you used the word pepped. From the context I worked out, that you meant, you know, pick a mad team that proceeds to lose the game, which is, I thought, harsh. Right. I thought harsh, actually, considering Guardiola has picked a lot of winning teams over the years. But, you know, he's been the gold standard. He has been the gold standard for a long time. Are you, would you endorse the sentiment that this man, Xabi Alonso, is the new Pep, with a squarer jaw and superior social skills, but with the same type of insight into the game and the same ability to create, to show us things we've never seen before in the football field? Would you go that far?
Firstly, I think it's a bit rich given the criticisms I've heard from you on Pep before to be leveling that at me. Secondly,
nicely done, Eddie.
Secondly, I think the thing about Xavi is that he's still learning, and he's still not afraid to say that. I think that he's got the potential to go there, but it's still about those next steps that he takes. And I obviously, dealing with Leverkusen, as I said, from an environment point of view, is a good place to learn. And I think that compared to ex-players who we have seen, I'm happy to name Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard and Wayne Rooney, and you see the way that Wayne Rooney, less so I would say, but the way that they want to accelerate their career before having really learnt those hard yards. Well, maybe they're just not as bright as Xabi Alonso as well. I think that is here the case. And I don't know if he'll be the next Pep, but I think he's going to be a great coach. And I'm also, because I've listened enough to Jonathan Wilson over the years, I don't know how much is new that we're actually seeing, but it is incredible to see how he has made a Leverkusen team and club who have always been stuck with this reputation of falling short, Leverkusen, always choking, and there just is a completely different belief and way of doing things right now. Sure, we have to overcome European hurdles. I wouldn't be surprised if they meet Liverpool for the sake of narrative at some point in the Europa League this season. But yeah, he is going to be a great manager. I'm sure of that much.
Oh yeah, Liverpool fans are watching this with interest. Archie, thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
The training pitch is a disgrace. Somebody's got to hold a hand up and say, it's like training on a car park.
No regrets about it, you know. As soon as you ask me a question, I'm going to give you an answer.
Who, John Delaney?
He could have phoned me, of course he could have.
Try my hotel room. Yeah, you can laugh. That was the World Cup.
As an ex-player and as an Irishman, and I mean an Irishman, born in Rare Deer,
and I felt I was entitled to give my opinion.
Swinging in the backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistling my name.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
Open up a beer and you say get over here and play a video game.
Why did you turn it off?
I see
you put on silent. You just gonna let it ring.
Kiss, but it's fair,
all right, that's good manners.
Play a video game.
If that was my team, I'd go into the dressing room and I wouldn't even mention the handball. I'd just say, why didn't someone put their head in it? France would definitely take it and Ireland never grabbed it. Usual stuff. Afraid of that next step. Mentally not strong enough. But they can complain all they want, and all these players, they can complain all they want. It's not going to change. France are going to the World Cup. Get over it.
You sounded disappointed earlier, Ken, with Evan Ferguson not getting much game time at the weekend. So I am pleased to finish on a high by reporting the Irish involvement in the Liverpool versus Burnley fixture.
Oh yeah.
Darragh O'Shea making his 16th Premier League start in a row. The fifth fastest player in the Premier League, of course, as discovered last week.
And what a goal.
First ever goal in the Premier League. A bullet header.
Oh, it was a brilliant goal, yeah.
Past Caoimhín Kelleher, making his third Premier League start of the season in place of the stricken Alisson. Mm-hmm. It was a flu bug going around Liverpool camp. Nothing that Kelleher couldn't do anything about that goal, and did make a couple of one really good save in the first half and another crucial save, which should have actually been just knocked past him in the second. So a positive feather in the cap there for Caoimhín Kelleher. Not quite a clean sheet, but if you're going to concede to anyone, it might as well be an international teammate in Darragh O'Shea.
And all done, of course, in front of the Premier Sports TV cameras.
Yeah, I must say, Damien and Kenny were somewhat dubious about the Darragh O'Shea fifth fastest in the Premier League stat.
What, they just didn't believe it?
They were surprised. Damien noted in jest that there is quite a significant. Well, this part isn't in jest. Apparently, there's a real slope in Turf Moor. Like when you're playing there, you notice that it's like one way down.
He was actually rolling. He wasn't running at all.
He feels maybe he was going down the hill.
Burnley have other players. You know, everyone gets to play Burnley at some stage. Everyone gets to benefit from that slope at some point.
Unbelievable. No.
Why is it Darragh O'Shea?
Why are they riding on Darragh O'Shea's parade?
Because their centre halves weren't as fast as. It's jealousy, Murph. Envy. Former player envy.
I just feel like
they never clocked that kind of.
Run like the wind, Darragh.
Cunningham wouldn't do it on his bike.
Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Owen. And thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Kieran. And thank you, Owen.
We'll see you during the week for Champions League coverage and more, but only if you're a World Service member. All episodes will be ad-free if you sign up. The Second Cabins podcast is part of the AGS Radio Network.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.